David McClelland is Professor of Physics at the Australian National University in Canberra, and he's in pursuit of gravitational waves, and this year is a promising time to do so, as you'll hear. But why should we be involved in Australia in such a huge quest? First, though, some defining of terms. You really have to be careful in physics, don't you?
First of all, something I didn't really know was a kind of mistake. The difference between gravitational waves and gravity waves. Apparently there is one.
Yes, gravity waves we find on the Earth's surface, on the oceans of the Earth. The waves are determined, their shape is determined by the gravity, which determines when they roll over. So we call those gravity waves. Gravitational waves are waves in space-time generated by massive events in the universe. They're not waves of water, they're waves of space-time.
And there was a bit of a flurry a few months ago when they thought they'd found some, but it turned out to be dust or some sort of interference. What are you doing this year that's going to make a difference through something called LIGO?
Well, LIGO, which is the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory, is something which is looking for gravitational waves in the audio band. That's from 10 hertz to 10 kilohertz. The experiment that you referred to that was turned out to be dust was looking at when the universe was very, very young, a frequency band right down in the very, very low, 10 to minus 10 hertz. Very different range. But with our detectors, we're trying to directly sense gravitational waves which pass through the Earth using laser interferometry. And this is a field which has matured over the last 50 years to reach the sensitivity levels which we now feel can measure the very, very small waves that pass through the detector.
Small waves, but here I am sitting on an armchair and I can feel gravity strongly. And of course, when you've got gigantic cosmic bodies, surely it's so huge you should be able to find them easily.
Well, gravity is huge. Gravity causes the space around it to curve, and that's what we sense. If we're outside the Earth, what we're sensing is the fact that the Earth has curved space around us, and we feel that we're falling or moving in that curvature. Yes, they're quite massive, and black holes, for example, are huge curvatures in space-time. And Einstein says that's what causes curvature, is mass. But space-time is also very, very stiff. It's the stiffest stuff we can think of. So it needs enormous events in energy to cause a ripple on that curvature. That type of ripples that we think we can see come from neutron stars, for example, colliding with each other. We're trying to measure that change, which will be equivalent to measuring our sun moving one human hair closer to Alpha Centauri.
You're kidding.
Light years away.
How many?
4.3 light years. That's the change we're trying to measure. It's incredibly small.
I'm staggered. Why is 2015 a significant year then?
It was in 1915 when Einstein first penned his theory of general relativity. 1905 was the year of special relativity when Einstein unified space and time, but he didn't have gravitation in his theory. In 1915, he introduced gravitation, introduced this curvature, this geometric interpretation of the force of gravity, the only force that can be interpreted by geometry. That happened 100 years ago, and when he first mentioned gravitational waves in a paper. So 100 years since then, we think we're on the verge of being able to measure these waves.
And when you're on the verge, do you do it in Australia or do you use instrumentation elsewhere?
These detectors are massive instruments. They're 4 kilometer Ls. The separation between a beam splitter where you split the light and you send light 4 kilometers down one high vacuum tunnel, 4 kilometers down the other high vacuum tunnel. The light comes back again, and we look at the interference of the light waves to give us a measure of the gravitational waves. So that project, the one we are particularly close to, called LIGO, it's $500 million.
So why do they want Aussies helping them? Why don't they just do it themselves?
This is a very good question. The LIGO project was initially only funded by the NSF to build the first generation detector. And they were funded, the NSF said, look, we don't expect you to detect gravitational waves, we just want you to demonstrate the technology. And that was done in about 2006. So then the Science Foundation said, we want to improve those detectors by a factor of 10. This is an international endeavour, And Germany and the UK and Australia joined with the USA in this project.
Which is encouraging. Are we going to get our own instrumentation one day?
Well, I hope so, and I think there are very good reasons why we should have a detector here in Australia. Unlike an optical telescope or a radio telescope, that you point at a particular place in the sky and you say, well, the signal came from one direction. A gravitational wave is more like an ear. You hear it, but it's very, very poor resolution. We don't know really where it came from if only one of our senses measured it. So we need a distributed group of sensors over the Earth's surface. And to get the best pointing to localise signals, we really will need one in the longer term in the Southern Hemisphere, and Australia is where the technology is to be able to do that.
Can we expect anything possibly to detect gravitational waves this year?
There is an exciting possibility, and that is in something called an intermediate mass black hole binary system. We think we know black holes exist. In fact, when we measure the gravitational waves from a black hole, we measure out the space-time curvature around that object. And that is really the only way to say that is a black hole. So that's pretty exciting in itself. But we don't know whether black holes exist on the 100 to 500 solar mass scale. If they do, and there is two of these black holes which merge with each other, LIGO this year would be able to see that event. The expectation, we really don't know, to tell the truth. No one has any evidence that black holes of that size exist. Huge ones, yes, this intermediate range, we just don't know. So our assumption is that we won't see that. We basically work out our probabilities based on a known source, and that's not black holes spiraling into each other, neutron stars. And we can pretty well, using general relativity, predict the shape of that waveform. And our best estimate at the moment that a three-month run this year with LIGO might have a chance of seeing one signal, probability maybe less than about 1% or more. So it could happen, but not likely.
Okay, you found one. Huge difference for physicists like yourself. What about the rest of the public? What significance will it have beyond an important physics discovery?
The implications of the discovery for the understanding of fundamental physics, as you quite note, is huge. The direct detection of gravitational waves means that, for example, people who are looking for these primordial gravitational waves at least know they do exist now. So discoveries like this have an impact right across the spectrum. We will learn about whether general relativity is right and when does it start to break down. Eventually, of course, general relativity is a classical theory. It will break down. So it's not going to last forever. We have to find that solution of general relativity in quantum mechanics. So from a physics viewpoint and an astrophysics viewpoint, we'll be able to learn about the way physics happens inside objects. What we see now is the light which came from the outside. So we see what happened when matter, for example, a supernova, interacts with other matter and creates light waves. But that doesn't tell us what's happening in the core of that event. Gravitational waves don't interact with matter very well at all. Information comes out and that tells us about what's happening inside the object. In terms of will gravitational waves provide us with a new radio? No, it's highly unlikely. Something which manages to only move our sun by that human hair within that distance, it's not really a medium for communication. But the technology that we need to develop to make those measurements is already having profound consequences. Things like improving sensors for security, for exploration, for improving how well we can measure the cracks in the wing of a supersonic aircraft. These ideas come out of the precise measurements that have been developed in the gravitational wave field. So technology spin-offs are quite large.
That's good to know. David McClelland is Professor of Physics at the Australian National University in Canberra. Next week, Energy Futures number 3. Here's a foretaste.
Our next stop is a giant abandoned mine site that's converting one-fifth of Sydney's household garbage into power. It's called the Woodlawn Bioreactor, and it's just outside the ACT. I spoke to Ben Sullivan, group manager for Veolia in New South Wales, at the top of this massive hole in the ground. It has an area of about 4 football fields and is more than 100 metres deep.
This site is taking about 20% of Sydney's waste. In terms of what we're doing from waste to energy conversion, it's about 7,000 homes would be the equivalent of what we're taking out and providing back into the grid.
But how are they turning garbage into electricity? A system of pipes running through the pit are a hint. They're picking up methane, a potent greenhouse gas, as the waste decomposes.
People would commonly think of it as a landfill, but it's slightly different in that we're actually encouraging the waste, which is predominantly food waste, to break down, and within that process we extract the methane and using that as a renewable energy. This setup is different in comparison to a landfill, which typically wants to compact the waste. With a bioreactor, we feed the leachate and the water back through the system, and that in fact helps the waste to break down quicker. And through the process of that, in keeping the water in that landfill and not compacting it, we're able to extract the methane through the process.
Carl Smith on Energy Futures, and we'll also have Gluing Your Brain and DNA Forensics for Babies, production by Luke Purse and David Fisher. I'm Robin Williams.